There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the Hoosier Huddle podcast. I'm Sammy Jacobs. Along with us is TJ Immon. And tonight we will be discussing the transfer portal. No, we're not talking about the newest sci-fi movie. Or anything like that. The transfer portal is the hot thing in college football. It was created in October. We'll talk about whether or not we like it, what needs to change about it, what are the upsides and downsides of the transfer portal, and much, much more as we try and get into more national topics, things that affect college football, things that fans of college football want to know and want our opinions on as well. So we'll discuss that as well. TJ, welcome to the show. How are you today?
I'm doing very well. Yeah, wish this summer would, get here as opposed to feeling like fall but not having football. It's a bit misleading weather right now, but, we're going to talk about an interesting topic, the one that I know coaches and fans certainly have seemingly differing opinions on. Of course, the coach's opinion likely will change based on whether or not a player that they either lost or want to gain eligibility quickly kind of seems to differ on whether or not it benefits them or not.
Yep, and we are 105 days away from week zero. In the college football season. And so there's actually a really good game week zero this year. Miami and Florida are playing in week zero. Something to look forward to. I always like week zero because I see some of these smaller programs, some FCS games as well. But Miami and Florida moved up to week zero from week one just to give themselves a buffer, since over the last couple of years, games have been affected by the tropical weather down south. IU had a game that was canceled 2 years ago, and it's all changing. So it's a marquee game on week zero, so that's pretty cool. But let's get into the transfer portal, TJ. So for all our listeners, if you don't know what the transfer portal is, it's starting in October, Division I athletes have the ability to transfer to different schools and receive a scholarship without asking their current school for permission. So back before October, you had to get a release, and you've seen a lot of – you saw coaches and teams and schools block players. You saw the – like if you're at, let's say, LSU – and you wanted to transfer, they would block you from Alabama or Ole Miss or Auburn, things like that, schools that they directly competed with. And, you really got a bad taste in your mouth if, let's say, your number one quarterback transferred from LSU and went to Alabama. You really don't want that to happen if you're going to go to LSU. But now you don't have to ask for permission. You have to inform your school of your desire to transfer. Then the school has 2 business days to put your name in a database. And the transfer portal sounds a lot cooler than it actually is. It's not some sci-fi door where you walk through at another school. It's not, one of the Infinity Stones that has and could pop up here and there. But it's basically a geeky spreadsheet that somebody has, and you put it in, and it was never intended to be as public as it is, but it does allow for a little bit more transparency in it. It kind of takes out the shadiness of transfers of guys, recruiting other guys behind coaches' backs and things like that. So once you enter the portal, it is your intention to transfer. You don't have to transfer, but that's your intention. And it kind of lets schools contact you about their interest in you as a player. So it's definitely a little bit different. TJ, do you have anything to add to that?
No. I think that the overall process certainly wasn't revolutionized or completely changed by the introduction of the portal. Like you said, it really, the primary change was that you no longer were required to get, quote, permission from your school. And it I think, like you said, an unintended consequence of having this portal is that it is now much more public and trackable, I guess would be a good word for it, kind of enterprise and industry almost of tracking these transfers, who's in the, quote, portal and who, you know, where guys are going, has certainly become a more public process since that introduction of it. And I think that, you know, we're going to talk about the pluses and minuses of the entire process, but that's certainly one unintended consequence is that guys that do enter that portal, it's supposed to be private, but, you know, we know at this stage of the game that it's not. It's very quickly public knowledge of, you know, Ohio State quarterback Tate Martell or Ohio State quarterback Baldwin or name your player. Once they enter that portal, it's very quickly public knowledge that they are intending to transfer. And that, you know, that's somewhat expected, but it is also a little bit difficult. You do have to keep in mind, you know, a lot of these guys are still in the process of transferring. They have not chosen a destination. They're probably still enrolled at that school, still going to classes, and I'm sure that makes for a lot of awkward conversations that they have to have with their peers.
Yeah, it's definitely more transparent. It's probably a little less corrupt, and you know, one of the like we said, unintended drawbacks is the publicity of it. You know, you could check on 247, and
yep.
They have, I think it's the real time. It's as real time as you could get to the transfer portal on guys who are transferring, thinking about transferring. And the drawbacks to that for me is, you know, you kind of get blowback from fans. You kind of, maybe there's a guy who wants to transfer for reasons other than, you know, maybe they have a sick family member or they're homesick or they just don't fit in the school that they're at that they thought they would, like they would and stuff like that. And, you know, some of the fan blowback is just not fair to the players either, but you know, it is an interesting process. It's interesting to see, you know, when the timing of guys entering the portal and, you know, where they end up and how they end up to where they're at. So is the transfer portal overall, is it good, TJ?
You know, I don't think that there's a necessarily great blanket answer for that, but if we are distilling it down to positive versus negative, I think overall, yes. I think that it is overall, I never liked that you were required to get the, quote, permission of your school to go through that transfer process. And I never liked that there was an ability of an institution, let's say certainly a example off the top of my head that I remember you know, a Penn State player was attempting to transfer, and there were a number of schools that were blocked. Obviously, you know, the obvious ones would be schools that you play in your upcoming schedules. You don't want a player that, you know, you thought was good enough to play for you to transfer to a school that you're going to take on the next season or the one after that. And then also you were, it was the restrictions were placed that they couldn't go to another state school. They could not go to any school in the conference. And it got to the point where there was, you know, a limited number of destinations for that player. And I never liked that part of it. The one part that I don't love about the portal is how public it has become, and that was never supposed to be the case. However, I have not heard, and I'm sure there are examples of this, but they had not been public in the research that I was doing about this. I did not find any players that came out and said, hey, you know, I was discouraged when I entered the transfer portal. I was discouraged by or felt that the reaction that I got was so negative that I regretted my decision to enter the transfer portal. I did not read anything or hear of any interviews where players felt that that was such a big drawback and such a hindrance to them that they felt the process needed to be changed. And really, that's what that drawback would be too. I mean, to me, I find all college football news largely interesting and fascinating. So, you know, I'm going to gobble that up and see, oh, where is Justin Fields going to go? Where is, you know, Tate Martell? You know, mainly it's your impact guys, your quarterbacks, your running backs, your receivers, the players that are easy to identify. But, you know, also offensive linemen, defensive linemen, you know, where are they going to end up? Kind of a secondary recruiting market. And for me, that's very interesting. And if players do not have a problem with that increased visibility, then I think overall it's a good thing. Now, I know that coaches, and you know, we'll talk about the transfer eligibility thing next year. I know that that is seemingly, according to a lot of reporters that talk to coaches about this and college football insiders that talk to coaches about this in off-season meetings, their biggest issue with it is with the transfer process is largely the inconsistencies in, you know, who's eligible immediately and who's required to sit out a year. That seems to be the coach's biggest point of contention. And I think that that's a very understandable issue to have with this whole process.
Definitely. And who's eligible and who's not. IU has benefited from it with Jack Tuttle becoming eligible. You've seen,
yes,
a transfer to Illinois, and Luke Ford, who was ineligible, and when you're dealing with the NCAA, that it becomes the most frustrating. You see a kid transfer home because of family issues, and the whole thing about sitting out a year is so archaic. It's so you could get used to your new school and things like that. High school football has become so big and so important in some of these places that it's kind of like going to a small college and playing and balancing school and playing a sport. And there's, you know, the transition exists, but sometimes, as Kevin Wilson said, sometimes the guys who play have an easier transition to the classroom because they have something to work for. They're not just going through, you know, a year just practicing. There's some reward for their work in you know, getting on the field and things like that. So, you know, I'd like to see the NCAA clean up its rules and not just seem like they throw darts at the wall and who's going to be eligible when. And you saw Justin Field and you saw Tate Martell become eligible before before Jack Tuttle, and Jack Tuttle's transfer happened at least a couple weeks, maybe a month or so before those guys, and it just seems so arbitrary about who's eligible and who's not, and that's really the frustrating part. I do think players should be eligible. They should be eligible. If you leave the school you were at in good academic standing, in good overall standing, you should be eligible to play at your next school. Coaches make jumps to other schools all the time and things like that. And that's one of the things. If your coach leaves, you might transfer. They recruited you. And sometimes it's the position coaches who leave, who recruited you, know you the best, you fit their system and things like that. And that changes that at some point that's got to change. And you got to play right away unless there's some circumstance where your grades aren't there, or maybe you're just not good enough to play and you sit out, or there's some disciplinary issue where you have to sit out. But, if a player is in good standing academically and from a citizenship standpoint, I do think they should be eligible. However, you can't – you got to cap transfers. Everybody should probably get one, and then cap it. And then there's got to be a penalty or some sort of hindrance to transfer, because then you get guys, okay, we're going to go here for a year, see if we could play. Okay, well, I lost the job to that guy. They're bringing in another freshman. I'm going to bounce around to there. I don't think that does the player any good, and I don't think that does the coaching staff any good, especially with the limited number of scholarships you get per year. It's really hard to build a roster, a deep roster, especially a school like IU, where you cannot miss on anybody. And if you start having guys, let's say Jack Tuttle comes in, doesn't play this year because Penix beats him out and wants to transfer, let's say to Miami of Ohio the next year. So he's gone from Utah to Indiana. Indiana's kind of built their quarterback room about, okay, now we have three guys, for the next couple of years. This is our strategy recruiting. And then he leaves, and you kind of get stuck. And it's, the credits transfer from Tuttle from Utah to Indiana to Miami and things like that. So it becomes difficult, and you don't, That's where it hurts stuff. And then you get into the graduate transfers, and that seems to be more of a free agency than the actual transfers to me. And I've gone down the rabbit hole now, but there's a happy medium between giving the players some rights, which they deserve, and not having an all-out free agency. And there's people who know it better than I do, who are probably smarter than me, but it is the NCAA. They need to sit down and figure it out. Figure out what's best for the student athlete, what's best for the health of college football, and come up with a plan and try and implement that plan. Now, it might take two or three times to figure it out, but sometimes that's what plans do. You see if something works, you try it out for a year. If it doesn't work, you figure out what part didn't work and you move on. So overall, I do think the transfer portal is good. I think it gives players some, the student athletes some rights in terms of that they have to be happy where they are. If they come to any school and are unhappy for 4 to 5 years and said, I want to transfer closer to home, or I want to transfer to a place where I'm going to play. There shouldn't be, after that first time, or before that first time, there shouldn't be any any hindrance to doing that. It's not fair to them, and they already are low on rights as it is. It needs to happen, and I think the transfer portal is good because of that. It gives student athletes some rights that they didn't really have to start at the beginning, and now you can't block them going to schools, which is pretty petty and pretty crappy. So, like, it's just like, come on, man. You can't, you know, if he was that good, he would be playing and he'd be bending over backwards for the kid. You're just being petty because the kid wants to go play at another school and they're going to give him the opportunity. But you face him in week three and it's like, well, he's too good to let go, but he's not good enough to play on my team. And that's how I take it. So we'll see. What other changes need to be made to this, TJ?
Well, it is you said a very good term, in my opinion, a balance, a balancing act between player rights and all that free agency. And I think that there's several different solutions that I've read about that I think would be interesting. I don't know which one of them would ultimately, be the solution. But I do think that one that would be interesting would be that when a player, if you take a transfer, and that transfer is going to count against your scholarship limit. There's a couple different proposals for it. The player's going to count against your scholarship limit for, their particular grad transfers one season plus an additional one. So you're having to think about, which grad transfers do you really want to take? I don't love that because it feels like it punishes the grad transfers who, have done everything they're supposed to in terms of they played at their school that they committed to. They ended up, graduating and earning a degree, and they're going to get a master's degree, which are they intending to pursue that or not, or are they just looking for an additional, year at a bigger stage? Well, either way, they have done what they're supposed to that point, and it feels like you're limiting their options in terms of, it really needs to be a special guy for a school to use a scholarship on him for two seasons. But that's one that I've read about. Another is that, if you are to, maybe punish the school in which the player is transferring from in an attempt to get teams to or to get programs to try harder to hold on to their guys and make it more difficult for schools to leave. But that's going to be very difficult to implement as well. Certainly one of the changes that I would like to see happen is I do want for there to be, as you said, immediate eligibility for anyone transferring for the first time from their school to a different school with good academic standing and, zero legal issues that would be necessitating the transfer. I think that should be automatic. I don't think that players should have to seek an attorney to, gain their immediate eligibility. There's an attorney with the last name of Mars that has been involved in over 100 cases of players' eligibility here in the past few years. Interestingly, he's, unbeaten, if you will. He's gotten his clients' immediate eligibility every time, which is interesting that players have needed to go get him and that they've all been wins. I mean, that's somewhat odd, but I don't see why that's a need, Like, why do players have to go get an attorney to ensure that step, which to me should be a given? So I would like to see that change. And then, you know, I do think that putting a cap, as you said, a cap of one transfer on there is with the exception of just incredible circumstances. And if you do have an incredible circumstance of, hey, I've transferred once already, but I'm going to transfer again, you know, I do think at that point sitting out a season is one that is going to potentially keep that from becoming a recurring issue. I think that a lot has been made of transfers, and I completely understand it. I think a large part of the visibility of the issue is because of social media and sites like 24/7 Sports, which give people more access to this process, which has always been around. I mean, transfers are not, you know, they're not significantly up in percentage terms in college football.
No, it's more visible.
Exactly. Yeah, it's more visible. And I think that that's important to note, that this is not some new crisis that college football is just learning to cope with. It's been around for the entirety of college football, and there were times previously, back before college football was big business, that read some of the stories about guys that transferred in the middle of seasons to, you know, go play for like University of Chicago or, you know, whatever. And they would leave and go, and then they would, for whatever reason, play for a couple games there, and then they'd go back to their previous school and finish out the season there. I mean, just wild, wild west stuff. This is not some new issue for college football or for any collegiate sport. And I think that's important to realize, that it's just a higher visibility. Now, that doesn't mean that the NCAA should be lax and ignore it, because I do think that there's an ability to do right by the student athlete while also ensuring that schools and the ability to construct a roster is also protected somewhat as well. But I think the first issue that should be addressed is the immediate eligibility, because I think you can still have a balance between player rights and, you know, the rights for the, or at least maybe not rights, it's the wrong word, but, you know, the ability for schools to construct rosters and have a decent idea of who's going to be on their roster from year to year. I think you can still strike that balance while granting the players immediate eligibility if they have taken care of the classwork and stayed out of trouble. I think that's the first and easiest fix for the NCAA. To me, that one's a no-brainer.
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, it's something that no-brainers aren't the NCAA's bread and butter. A lot of no-brainers take them forever to figure out. And it's just, it's not their bread and butter. Hopefully, though, that's no better that they can figure out and figure it out quickly. And it has the potential to blow up and blow up in people's faces. And nobody wants a free agency in college football. Nobody wants to see a guy, they've been following it since high school and following his recruitment, and were excited when they committed. They want to follow that guy for three, four, 5 years and root for him. And I think that's how you build a fan base too, is you have guys who you can root for 3, 4, 5 years. And if you go where you have, let's say, I don't think it ever gets to the point where half of recruiting class transfers, but if it does, then, you know, it's kind of like the NFL. It's, you're rooting for a jersey, and you're rooting for a jersey anyway, because turnover in college high every 4 or 5 years, but you don't get a chance to get to know the player. and you don't get a chance to know their backstory and, you know, just get to know them. And there's a certain sense of pride that college sports has that pro sports just doesn't. And, you know, we went to the same school, and you know, you identify with that player as, you know, in 4 years, we're alumni of the same place. We have that connection. Now, I'm a Jets fan. I will never have any connection with any Jets player ever unless they had gone to IU. I will never play for the Jets. I will only root for the Jets and maybe curse at the Jets every so often. But it's, you kind of, and it's going to go for all college sports. Fans fall in love with players for 4 or 5 years, and then they're in love with them the rest of their careers. And you kind of take that away if guys just jump ship after a year or two. So hopefully it doesn't come to that. I think that would kill kind of the specialness of college sports. But there definitely is a middle ground where guys need the opportunity to play. And if they came in, tried their hardest, did the right thing in the classroom, did the right thing on the field, and they're just, maybe they're not good enough. Maybe, you know, somebody else beat them out for a spot. Maybe they're just too far from home, and you know, maybe they have a sick parent or grandparent who took care of them, and they want to move closer to give them the opportunity to see them play. I'm fine with those being the reasons why you transfer once. But we got to find that middle ground. Hopefully the NCAA does. Hopefully they do the right thing in a lot of these cases. But we'll see. Any final thoughts, TJ?
No, I mean, it's a delicate issue. It's a difficult issue. And it's one that, you know, I think that the NCAA needs to proactively search for answers and try some different things. Like you said earlier, you're not going to get this perfect probably at any point. I mean, it's probably never going to be perfect, and that's fine. You know, it's okay to have a system in place that's not perfect. That doesn't mean that you just sit back and do absolutely nothing and pretend like it's already perfect. You know, you try some things, search for those solutions, proactively seek out those solutions, and put systems in place or checks in place to try and improve things every year. And I think doing that would go a long way towards, you know, helping the rights of the athletes and really helping the sport as a whole and the collegiate sports as a whole just by improving the perception of the NCAA. If they can say, look, you know, we are trying here. We are trying to increase the rights for our athletes, take care of them, and put them in the best situations we possibly can. And I think, you know, taking those efforts would go a long way towards just improving some of the goodwill towards the NCAA. And in addition, you know, helping, I think, athletes and the product on the field as well. So I think that the best thing the NCAA can do is be proactive in searching out for some results and trying some different things to see if they're good or bad, or you know, you keep the good ones and try and tweak them and improve on them, and you throw out the bad ones and try again. So for me, that's the best thing the NCAA can do here, is proactively search out those results and try to put checks and processes in place to make things better every year.
Yeah, that's all you can ask for. Anyway, TJ, that does it for tonight's show. I think in 2 weeks we're going to discuss the college football playoff. As long as there's no breaking news, we'll discuss the college football playoff, what needs to change on that, and all that, and our thoughts on that. Is it good for college football? And all those things. We'll do the same kind of format. Hopefully people enjoyed the discussion today. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you, everybody. Have a great couple weeks, and we will be back here. The countdown starts soon, so check Hoosier Huddle soon for the start of that. It's always a favorite part of the off season for us.
definitely. We are about 112 days away from IU football kicking off. But before we go, I'd like to take a second to introduce our newest friends from SeatGeek. Let them take the confusion out of your ticket buying experience. Instead of shopping dozens of sites to find the best deal, let SeatGeek do the work for you. Their app scans the web for the best deals to your favorite game, concert, or show, and rates them on a scale of 0 to 10 to let you know if you're getting the best bang for your buck. A green dot marks great deals, yellow dot good deals, and red dot not so good deals. Pretty simple, right? Use promo code ACAA at checkout to receive $20 off your first purchase. That's two free beers at the stadium on them, depending on what stadium you go to. What are you waiting for? That's promo code ACAA for $20 off your first purchase. SeatGeek, life's events, life's an event, we have tickets. So SeatGeek's a great tool. Used it in the past, and it's a great way to get to events that for good deals. Do come back to HoosierHuddle.com. Follow Twitter at Hoosier_Huddle. We'll have the countdown, off-season content, and much, much more coming up.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.